Now, let's settle for the details on this Friday's edition of The Pulse. And something great, something big is coming on Monday. Because on the 25th of March, President Akufo-Addo will launch the Ghana Smart Schools Project to usher in a new era of education in Ghana. Each student at the secondary level will be given a laptop computer to aid their studies. The project is part of efforts by government to enhance e-learning and digitalization. The statement announced the launch says the initiative supports the government's goal of leveraging technological advancement to prepare the Ghanaian student for the fourth industrial revolution. So how is this going to transform education in Ghana? Here are the numbers in our secondary education system so far. And so what you have on your screens, we have the numbers as from 2000 or the 2016 all the way coming up to the 2023-2024 academic year. And it's been a steady progression from 308,799 in the 2016-17 academic year, and then it's risen all the way to 448,214,000 for the 2022-23 academic year. So they've been a steady progress, and I'm guessing that the Free Senior High School program has also contributed to enrollment figures in our secondary school. So the average annual enrollment, currently as we have it, is 422,940,000 for the senior high school level. And I was making a point that the Free Senior High School has also contributed to, you know, lifting up enrollment, especially at this level. So this is big. Of course, if you look at the fact that ICT has become a global acceptance, then this makes it even more important. So how is this going to happen? And for those who are likely to benefit from it, have they been taught how to use a computer? And how is this going to help them in the advancement of teaching and learning, especially at the senior high school? Now, join us to understand this and more is Nana Jemfi Ajumboa. He's the Executive Director for the Center for National Distance Learning and Open Schooling, the government agency leading this drive. And we're going to have a conversation on this. Nana, you're welcome, and it's good
to
see you.
Thank you for having me.
Right, so I was just going through, you know, the reason why we have teachers in our basic and secondary school level on strike. One of the demand, or one of the reasons why they are on strike, is that government has failed to deliver on the promise of, you know, resourcing every teacher with a laptop, and that's one of them. And I guess that's not the reason why we are here this afternoon. But on Monday, something significant will happen, and it is the distribution of laptops to every senior high school student. Why has this become so important? Let's set the foundation, and we'll look at the other key matters that are coming up as a result of this.
Very good. Once again, thank you for having me, Mr. Elton, and I bring you greetings from the Ministry of Education, greetings from the Honorable Minister for Education, Honorable Dr. Yoes Edrichum, and the entirety staff at the Ministry of Education. Again, my name is Nana Jemfi Ajumboa.
Right.
I am the Executive Director of CENTLOS, and CENTLOS is the Center for National Distance Learning and Open Schooling. My mandate is very simple, to infuse ICT into education. So that is what we do for the people of Ghana, especially in the educational system. Yeah, your question is very crucial, and why is it that the Ghana Smart School, as of now, we know the world has witnessed a lot of transformation or revolutions. The first one was, of course, the steam power. The second was when Con Edison was sitting somewhere in New York to support or to invent electricity. The third came with electronics. All of that, we did not take much heed. Now we are in the technological era.
Right.
And everything has been affected. And COVID has also ushered a new era to everything we do. And education is no different. So we need to embrace it. And embracing it means we need to make sure every child, irrespective of location, should have access to education. And the Ghana government, through the leadership of Nana Adudanko Akufo-Addo, has bestowed something special on Ghana. That is the free SHS education and the free TVET. And now we have to depend on it to make sure there is access for everyone. Of course, we need to also make sure there's quality education, and the education has to be relevant to make sure the person will receive a lifelong learning. So anytime they finish, they could be a functional citizen or right. use the education to do something. Mm-hmm. But if you look at now, yes, we have the free SHS and we have the free TVET, but there's still significant numbers of people that still need access. So the Ghana Smart School, in short, is the extension of the free SHS and the free TVET that give birth to the Ghana Smart School to speak to the current regime of technology in education to make sure that a child, irrespective of who you, where you come from, what you do, you should have access to that digital device so education can speak to the current trends to make sure that we can compete globally in the other countries.
All right. So, I mean, so Monday, if I should go by the announcement that we've been told, there are over 400,000 students.
Yes.
Like, everyone will walk home with a laptop on Monday. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yes, everyone will receive a tablet. It's not a laptop.
It's not a laptop. It's a tablet. Right.
And it's a phased implementation. So we have selected 30 schools that the schools are ready to receive this. And after the 30 schools, then we go to another 30. So phased implementation until we cover the whole country. We are not leaving anybody out to make sure that, yes, SDG 4 agenda is being achieved. Mm. It's a crucial sustainable development goal that talks about equity, it talks about quality and access. If you look at access, the tablet will explode or expand access to other students. If you look at quality, yes, we are in the digital era, so the tablet will support teaching and learning for the teachers and the students to receive that platform to speak and to teach well. And of course, equity. We are not leaving anybody out
of this.
Persons with disability,
everybody is included.
As you are SHS 1, 2, and 3.
You should have it.
Oh, yes.
So 30 for a start on Monday.
Mm.
So what went into deciding on the 30 schools, and why not make it open to everybody? Because such that we don't have the situation where somebody is put in an advantageous position because of the accessibility of the tablet on Monday, for example, as we start off.
Yeah, a project of this sort is a national project, and implementation has to be done very right. So if you look at it, a lot of stakeholders' engagement has been done, and it's a collaborative project. So the private sector, public, industry, academia, we all have to come together. GES, which they owns the SHS, and the TVET, they are all part of it. So they came about with this schedule, with the minister sitting on top, that these 30 schools have to go. And the ministry, we have a plan and how to implement project, so we can keep an eye on monitoring and evaluation to make sure we achieve the results that we are looking for. Hence, that gave us that.
Do you have the number for the, I mean, the number of secondary schools, public secondary schools that we have?
We have 503 public secondary schools in the country.
So it's going to take a year or more before you can reach every secondary school?
Yes, it depends. Some areas, it could be a decision of the committee, and of course that we can double up. But the ground decision or the cardinal decision is that every student will receive a tablet. Mm-hmm. And the teachers already have their laptops, so they will be able to teach. If you are in SHS 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm. you are part of it, and you are going to receive your tablet. So the timetable, we are looking at it, and we prepare a comprehensive checklist, and in the checklist, suggest the schools that are ready to go, then the others will follow.
That will follow.
Because we need to make sure capacity building. And
do you have a time frame within which you are targeting to reach everybody?
The time frame, I mean, we know the tablets are here in the country already.
It's about distribution.
Yeah. And the GES stores in all the district will receive them, and the TVET stores. So once they receive them and they know that now my district is ready, see, it's a whole implementation plan, and we are doing it in a pyramid form. So from national to regional and district. Now, national, we know that we have done everything through the directives and the leadership of the Honorable Minister for Education. Mm-hmm. Now we know that some of the tablets will go to the region, so we can know when it will get to most of the schools. So mm-hmm. definitely, it will get to the upper. Yeah.
But you are not so clear when you exhaust this.
I could say that within
maybe 6 months, a year,
a few months,
every school should have it.
Every school should have it. The tablet is already.
What kind of laptop? Oh, sorry, I don't know why.
It's a tablet.
I don't know why a laptop is so much on my mind. But what kind of tablet are you giving the students?
Very good.
And what apps are on this tablet?
Very good. This is a project. Again, we did a lot of consultations. We made sure that we factored what we have in Ghana. If you are going to implement anything EdTech, you have to do infrastructural audit in your country to make sure you are ready for it. The audit came back, or the results of the data that suggested for the tablets that we had. And those tablets, it has a 4-inch screen, and it has a 4 GB RAM, that is storage, and it has a battery that can last for 7 to 8 hours, and it has a battery pack that is solar-based. So those that are not in the places they have electricity there, they could also leverage on it. Again, equity, so we don't want to leave anybody out. So definitely we have taken all this in consideration.
So the solar aspect is about dealing with power issues that may come up.
They're fantastic. So we are ready for it. The tablets are water resistant and is durable. And if it hits on the floor, it wouldn't do anything. The processor, guess what? It's a quad-core 2 processor, which is very good on speed. It's very good when it comes to electrical consumption. So all these have been factored before the construction of the tablets, and it's made for the people of Ghana, fit for purpose.
And it's for free?
Free.
So what is a laptop replacing in the life of a student?
Fantastic. You could say that the textbooks, as of now, if you look at the analysis, you know, anything that you do, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
In this case, the cost here, the benefits outweighs the cost. Mm-hmm. If you look at each of our schools, SHS, we have almost 4 core subjects. We have elective subject for SHS 1. Mm-hmm. And if you are to buy a textbook for one textbook will average you in the region of 150 Ghana cedis.
Right.
So buying all 8 for just one level, one term, that will cost the student and the parents a lot of money. Versus the tablets, that is one time you have contents on SHS 1 all the semesters or the terms, SHS 2 all the terms, SHS 3 everything on it, and you have an open educational resources that the student is flexible to maneuver, to study at will, any place, any time you can study. So you could see that the benefits outweighs, and also is preparing the student to use digital tools to compete globally and to build on their 4 C's. That talks about collaborations, creativity, critical thinking, and good communication skills.
This is great, but on the issue of electricity and solar for places that are hard to reach, I know that you are not really into policy at the ministry, but a lot of schools, they are struggling to even pay their electricity bills. I mean, last month, the electricity company of Ghana had to disconnect some secondary schools from their national grid because of indebtedness. Now, this is going to add to their electricity cost. How are they going to sustain this?
Again,
very, very well, the student is going to have his or her entire, course, textbooks now digitalized and put on this laptop. On this tablet.
Yes. So definitely, when it comes to these projects, like an enormous number of days or amount of research has been done, and we factored all these issues into it. And now we know that we are ready. At St. Louis and at the ministry, any project that we implement, and when it comes to EdTech, we do a lot of consultations. Mm-hmm. We focus on one, on policy to sustain the project, that policy to govern that initiative. We also look at infrastructure. So in the infrastructure, we look at connectivity and all that you are talking about. Then we look at capacity building. We also look at content, then curriculum and robust assessment. All of these has been researched into it. And Ghana is very ready for the Ghana Smart Schools project.
No, but I asked about how this is going to impact on the school's finance in terms of paying the electricity bill.
And whether
you've looked into this,
we have
probably made provisions
we
to
have
contain what is likely to be a rise in their budgetary allocation for electricity?
We have looked into that, and schools' electricity, all of them has been factored into it. You know, these schools, some of them have free Wi-Fi. Everything we are doing is contributing.
And for the schools that are without Wi-Fi, how are they going to?
This tablet has two modalities. It has offline and online mode. Offline, you don't need no connectivity, online connectivity. So offline places, you can use the tablets because it comes with a preloaded content. It comes with interactives. It comes with audio visuals, videos, and quizzes for throughout your educational system or delivery when it comes to SHS 1, 2, and 3. So you are very equipped, even if you find yourself in places with no connectivity. But I know that management and the government is taking a lot of strides to make sure that connectivity is everywhere. Ghana, we know we are 70% connected, 30% deficit. We are working to make sure there's be collaboration to connect everywhere. So that shouldn't be anything to talk about.
Right. So we are likely to witness a situation where, maybe for want of a better word, I can say that a bookless, you know, classroom, if you like.
Yes.
And I just got a text from a friend who is into publishing and said that this is clearly putting us out of business.
No, it's not.
Because now you're going to have only soft copy of the 30 books. So which means that printing becomes
30 books, 30 yes. schools. There's right. a lot of books. You know, all the contents that is produced on it is GES approved or free or TVET approved content. And NACA will approve them. Those textbooks that they needed, we have digitized them. Now it's on the platform. We work with the publishers to receive or to gain admission or to ask for permission to use their copyrighted materials on the platform. And guess what? If you look at Candle Fire, publishers are even making more money because their books are being digitized. The same structure is what is coming to Ghana now. So they are going to be making a lot of money, and they can reach a lot of people because your copyright will reach with you. We would have a discussion before we can put it on the platform. Again, this is for SHS, so the content that is needed is what is on the platform. If they have to reach out for instance, Akiola series, which I used it when I was in school, we will talk to them. We will take the copyright, let them know, per click, the amount of money they will receive, then we will digitize them and put it on the tablet.
This is huge, especially for the Ghanaian students. But the question is, how much is this costing the state?
That one, I know it's a Ghana government funding project, but that is something that is a discussion that it has to be for the minister, and other staff.
You don't have those figures.
As aspect. But again, we have to always look at the benefits before we jump into cost. I believe the benefits outweighs the cost. I don't know how much it costs, but per what I have exposed here or have expatiated here, you could see this is a fantastic project. Right. We are in the fourth industrial revolution, my brother, and we have to prepare our students for that globalization.
And I'm guessing that on Monday we'll have answers to some of these other
fantastic
questions that involves
yes.
policy. But the issue about capacity building, and for those who are virtually blind to ICT and the usage of this tablet, I'm wondering how they will be able to rise to the challenge and be more user-friendly, if you like.
This tablet is just magnificent. It's fantastic. It has all the features. And we took into consideration all this. Again, equity is the benchmark. So we are not leaving anybody out. So we have optical character recognition on the tablet, and we have Braille note pads. So
for those who are visually impaired.
Thank you. So once you go, all the features is there. We have taken a lot of time to assess these tablets to be all inclusive.
In terms of training, to make it applicable for the student who is like 14, 15 years old, has never had a tablet in his or her life before.
Yes. We have user guides in the tablet, and we have prepared.
You respect that they should train on their own?
No, we also prepared a lot of learner guides for them and send laws. We have staff together with some of our experts who will be going out and to do training, both in person and digital. So once you receive the tablet, you will see that there is training, how to maneuver your way. Everything will be recorded. And teachers we have been training teachers. A lot of teachers has received how to teach digitally.
The teacher themselves will be for example, the trainers, the first hand trainers?
Yes, trainer. Mm. So the teachers, and we have ICT coordinators in all the district. We have the CISOs, all the regions have ICT. So we are liaison with them, and they are going to train their district, and this will be a seamless implementation.
And another challenge that I see, which maybe you are also looking at it, mm. is the potential issue of theft, potential issue of missing tablets. So if I'm unable to account for my tablet, meaning I'm left behind in terms of the usage of it in the classroom, have you factored all of these?
We have factored all these. See, this is...
What are the remedies?
This is just like you going to a library to check out a book. When your book gets lost, it doesn't mean you have been kicked out or you can't study. So you have a tablet, and the tablet has IMEI numbers for us to track. All the tablets are being ensured, and we know where the tablet is. And monitoring will be done of the connectivity offline too. We have devices to monitor where the tablet is. So once you lose yours, there is structures for you to report where and how it got lost. And the ICT coordinator in your school will work with you to replace it for you, so you don't be left behind. All of these have been taken into consideration. We know they are students. Of course, anything can happen. Even wherever they have implemented, we benchmark with a lot of countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. Things like this is happening, of course, in South Africa, but the resolutions is there. So Ghana has benchmarked with all these countries, and we have come up with this, and we are ready, 100% ready, and resolutions is clear for this. Yes.
Before I let you go, I don't know how excited your sector is ahead of Monday and what the Ghanaian students should expect Monday and the days that would follow.
Well, I want to assure all Ghanaian students, especially SHS 1, 2, and 3, and the parents and teachers, that this is a buoyant implementation.
You're talking about a million people.
Yes, we are blessed that our president sees education as a public good. Our president sees education as a human right. Article 25.1c talks about that. That he wants every child to receive education irrespective of your location or your disability. We want to assure them that this transition would is mean going to deepen the education for them, bring more access, more quality, and especially relevance to our education, so we can compete globally and be globally competitive to our other neighbors, of especially in Africa and even in Europe and other places. So a child can finish school and have one of their digital skills. Mm. Because of these tablets, you can learn robotics, artificial intelligence, and coding. We are in the 21st century, fourth industrial revolution. To be a functional citizen, you should learn one of these crucial things I mentioned. And to have a tablet, now you are ready to go and become a functional citizen. We want to assure them that we know education is crucial, and we are not going to leave anything to chance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nana. And hopefully on Monday we'll see you for the official launch. Thank and you. Then the other matters that we are unable to
I am grateful. We'll do Thank so. You so much.
And so that is the matter that is coming up on Monday is the official launch of the one tablet per student, especially in the senior secondary school, from Form 1 all the way to SS3. And on Monday, President Akufo-Addo will do the official launch. Now, let's talk about water, because today is World Water Day. The Ghana Statistical Service has disclosed that one in every five persons in Ghana, which accounts for 19% of the population, did not have sufficient drinking water, according to the 2022 Ghana Demographic and Health Survey. The deficiency varies significantly across regions, with the northern region topping the list, where one in every three persons, equating to 32%, lacks adequate drinking water. And we have the outcome of this demographic and health survey that the Ghana Statistical Service put together relating to the issue of water. So there you have it, one in five persons in the household population do not have enough drinking water, and that's accounts for over 19% of the entire population. And they've broken it down to national, to northeast, and northern region, and of course the upper west region. So the national is 6.5%, a percentage of population that travel more than 30 minutes for water. And then for the northeast, 27%, Northern Region 18, and then it goes on and on, meaning that in the Northeast Region, 27%, they have to travel more than 30 minutes in search of water. Now, this afternoon, we'll have a conversation with stakeholders in the water sanitation space about the current water sanitation across the country. But first, what is the situation in the Northern Region? Remember that the Member of Parliament for Tamale South, Haruna Iduso, read a statement on the floor of Parliament, drawing attention to the fact that water has become more scarce, especially in the Northern Region, where people are now resorting to other means to have access to what he wants to describe as, you know, quality water. My colleague Martin Abugri has more in the following report.
Several communities in the Northern Region are currently grappling with acute water shortage. The sun continues to hit up to 42 degrees in certain days and 40 degrees most of the days. This has compelled several dams to dry up. The few water centers look like market space because of the huge numbers that convert to fetch water.
Behind me is the Bolinga Dam. This dam is currently serving over 18 communities whose dams are all dry.
Beyond the 18 communities the Golenga Dam serves, it also serves several communities in the Tamale metropolis, especially Peri Urban Tamale. Abdul Shakun is from Nyampala, and their duty is to fetch water for his family.
We are coming from Nyampala, so we are going to fetch the water from the house. So we are going to use it for cooking and that. That is how we are coming for here to fetch the water.
So why? There's no water around Nyampala. Why did you travel this far?
Oh, our dumpies are finished, so we cannot get clean water. So that is why we are coming here.
Okay. So when you send the water, how do you treat it?
I just going to pour it like that for bathing and cooking. Also, we are drinking.
So you drink the water as well?
Yes.
But you don't treat it. You don't fear that you could get disease?
Yes.
Right here, people are walking in and out of the water. We do not know what they are putting into the water. But these people will send this water and people will die. Sometimes untreated or drunk and they will drink.
Alas, and Salama says there are worms in the water, but they do not have a choice.
Take the water going to home. The water is not nice, so you put the pot, so you do the aloe. So the dirty water is down, the pure water is up. Take the water, the muggles is there. So water, you can drink the water. The muggle is dead. So you destroy your stomach or anybody.
For these women, the distance and time spent in search of water is a burden.
Whether the water is cold or not, these people have to rely on this water for every domestic group. People even drink right at the dump. There are fears that there could be a possible outbreak of waterborne disease in the world. For joining us, Matina Kukun.
Right, so that is the situation in the Northern Region. I guess the same situation can be said in the other parts of the country, even sometimes here in the Greater Accra Region, where access to water for some people is quite a very difficult, adventure. Now, let me bring in the General Manager in charge of Public Relations with the Ghana Water Company, Mr. Stanley Marte. Mr. Marte, you welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Let me say a happy World Water Day to you, if there's something like that.
Thank you very much, and I wish you stay.
All right, our first report about the challenge people go through in having access to what they even want to describe as a portable water, especially in the northern region of Tamale, is quite bad. I mean, to the extent that in some cases, they are having to struggle for water with sometimes animals. Let's start from the northern region. I mean, at this time, it's difficult. The Member of Parliament for Tamale South brought it to the attention of the Speaker on the floor and demanded urgent action because it is becoming a crisis there. What is the Ghana Water Company's reading of the situation and what have you done about it?
Okay, thank you very much. I think you all know that water provision has been at the heart of management of Ghana Water Company Limited. And we do not leave any stone unturned to ensure that people get water at any time. There's a lot being done in the northern region, not the northern region, but all the northern regions, upper east, upper west, Savannah, northern OT region. There's a lot being done in those areas.
Mm.
And so when the Member of Parliament raised it, we still had to go down to check. So top management of Ghana Water Company Limited traveled to the north. We visited all the chiefs. We visited the regional minister. We went into the areas. We assessed the situation. We told them the plan for the area, the short-term plans, the medium-term plans, the long-term plans. And with the short-term plans, the work has started in earnest to ensure that no stone is left unturned, to ensure that the people of Tamale get access to portable water and to get the regular.
Mm.
One other aspect is that we are our own enemy. Okay. We are our own enemy.
Mm.
Our main line, okay, one, I'll start from Sanwini in the Nawini River, which affects the quality of the raw water of the the raw water in Nawini. So we have our treatment plant at Dalon where we extract water from the Nawini River to treat and then pump into the river of Tamale. Now when the wind alluvia soil, it turbids the water and it becomes very difficult for us to get adequate water for the people. That is one of the issues. Now if we are pumping water into town, we pump through transmission lines. Now what happens that along the transmission line, there are a lot of villages. And what they do is to pump the transmission line for water to just fill so that one, they can fetch to feed their animals and sometimes their farms. When we come across some of these things, we need to shut down the entire treatment plant and to have a repair.
Mm.
You can imagine if every week they've had to shut down a day or two to repair some of these perforations on the transmission pipeline. It affects the volumes of water that goes into the Tamale metropolis and it affects the pressures as well. We need to be producing consistently and constantly to ensure that pressures are built up to go into the nook and cranny of the Somali metropolis.
Mm.
But once all these things occur, it becomes very difficult for us to build the pressures enough to reach everywhere.
Is the dryness of the place also a factor, especially for water bodies that serve as a primary source?
Yes, I'm building my argument. But like you said, yes, that is one of the factors. Now, most trees that give the Nawini River some cover have all been cut down. And even in that area, there's a lot of vast lands that are very plain. There's no forest cover or there's no trees giving the water body some cover.
Mm.
So the rate of evaporation is very high during the dry season. So we are faced with a lot of challenges trying to get enough water to treat for the people. Now, so these are the challenges I've faced in that area.
Right.
I wouldn't want to go into everything, but one of our main challenges is the fact that the NETCO is unable to give us consistent power. Okay? So, two or three power outages in a day renders us almost incapable of producing the whole day. So we lose a whole day system when we get like two or three power outages. Okay, this is one of the challenges, but we are doing everything possible. We are working with NETCO to ensure that they are able to give us enough power or consistent power to enable us also produce consistently and constantly so that we can get water to the people.
And what are they telling you? What is NETCO telling you about their inability to ensure reliable power supply for your plants?
We are all government agencies. We all have challenges. We are different agencies. We appreciate ourselves. We appreciate the challenges that we all go through. So we are working together to ensure that the best is done so that at least we can do that. So there's some collaboration going on to ensure that there's constant flow of power. So, you know, there are lots of things that we're also doing, including public education to ensure that the people appreciate the challenges that we go through.
Right.
And especially what they do to affect our production. You understand?
So right.
That there's this concept antisocial behaviors, and then we can help them. We keep saying that one of our slogans is that you help the GWCL to help you. Okay? Help the GWCL to help you. Now, you have to help us, one, by keeping managing and maintaining our water bodies clean. Mm-hmm. So we have clean raw water source. We have to stop the perforation and functioning of the transmission line. We have to stop illegal connections. We have to stop all the antisocial attitudes or behaviors against the GWCL. Then we can also help you well. Assuming we don't have to shut down like once or twice in a week just to repair a perforated pipeline, we still can build on the pressures for water to get to the people. So it's essential that we all support each other so that things will go well, and then we can serve them and serve them effectively.
All right. So I guess that clearly, this call you are making is also a national call, because the national picture may also not be 100% rich, because in recent weeks, you have spoken about the impact of illegal mining, especially how it is affecting the production of water. Last month, for example, the indication was that even for the central region, you were not going to be in a position to give them 100% coverage. You were going to cut it down by 30%. All this advocacy that you've done in months, in years gone by, has seen any improvement, or the situation is getting worse, especially as we work to bring us quality water?
The line is breaking. It's a bit difficult for me to hear you. Hello?
Yes, Mr. Mate, I was asking about all the advocacy you've done in the months, years gone by. I mean, the issues about the activities of illegal mining, how that is affecting you, and the other factors that is making it difficult for you to operate and work at your full capacity. And whether all these advocacies that you've done, has it witnessed improvement, or the situation is getting even worse?
Okay, I wouldn't say that there hasn't been improvement at all, and I wouldn't say that everything is perfect. Okay, now it's good for us to continue with the advocacy so that we can have a perfect situation. But currently, I can't describe it as a perfect situation, and I think that we should continue with the public advocacy. We should continue with the public education. We should continue with everything that we are doing to ensure that our water bodies are kept clean. For us to have constant and consistent flow of water for our people. Okay, I think we need to continue the education. We don't need to relent in the effort or whatever we started a few years back. We need to continue with it. And we don't have to leave it alone to some of the stakeholders.
Mm.
Everybody is a stakeholder. Every citizen of Ghana has a role to play. You have a role to play. I have a role to play. Let us all work effectively to ensure that our water bodies are kept clean, and then we can also produce enough water for the people. And most especially the tariff. It's a tariff that is also killing people.
Right,
the cost of production is high as a result of the pollution of our water bodies. It's going to affect all of us. In the pollution season, we are going to have clean water, chemical usage, and everything will be minimal. Then it will impact positively on tariffs. So it's essential that if we are complaining about high tariffs, let us all work together and stop the pollution of our river bodies so that we can have water at a very low cost.
And what about the payment of water bills? Improvements in that area too?
Yes, we are doing well. You know, since last year, we have been mobilizing revenue, so we have been on our customers. And it's a bit difficult, you know, when you realize that people do not have money, but you still will have to treat them for your money. And people are paying because we are also not doing any sort of rent. We are really, really on them. They need to pay. But we are also doing well. We are also working hard to ensure that they have access to water. Then it also becomes easier for them to pay. So there's improvement in all quarters. But we expect a better improvement than we are seeing now. We expect more from the people, and I'm sure they also expect more from us. So we all need to work hard and to ensure that there's some balance at the end of it all. And then all these problems will be okay.
Right, Mr. Martin, before I let you go, finally, and this morning we're told that you intend to spill water from the Wager Dam. If you tell us why and whether people who are sensitizing to move out, whether they are complying.
Okay, so one media house intercepted our internal member, which is one of the first processes before killing is done, and then they put it out. So it is imminent. It is imminent that. We will spill water, but the time is not due yet. And before we spill water, excess water from the dam, we need to follow a certain protocol. And we are in the process. But they jumped the gun and put the internal memo out. I will not say that we are not going to spill, but at this time, it is not right yet for us to say that we are going to spill. But whatever the case is, we spill because we have been spilling every year. Now we can't say we will fail or we will fail because of the challenges that we have with, let's say, climate change and all that. As I speak to you, we have been to the source of the Dinsu River. We are looking at the levels and we see whether the possibility of having high levels in the dam or not. So these are some of the things that we need to do. And we check these things on daily and on weekly basis so that when everything is okay and when everything is such that we are expecting more water into the system, then we can start minimal drainage and then be monitoring the levels the same. So we don't cause any challenges within the
right system.
The other aspect is to liaise with the municipal assembly so that they play their role by ensuring that people who live on the buffer zones are cleared, okay, all structures are cleared. And then, especially at the estuary, we need to dredge some areas to ensure that there is free flow of water into the sea when we start spilling.
Right.
There is a rubbish dam that has been created along the course of the river, which is also blocking the river. Now, when it blocks the river and the spillage, the water could divert into other areas. So we are still having a chat with them to see how we can clear the dam and create a very good channel for the water to flow into the sea. So all these things are in the process. We need to inform all the people living around to be cautious of themselves. Some of them will have to evacuate where they live. And all these things are being done before we announce to the general public that we are going to spill, especially when we get to the maximum operating level. Okay, so it's a process.
All right.
And our suggestion is that we'll follow through the process and then we'll follow it very well so that there wouldn't be any eventuality. It's just unfortunate that that internal memo leaked out to one media house and it is out. But I don't say it is wrong or it is right. Because in the last 20, 25 years that I've been with Ghana Water Company, we have spilled every year. And it is possible that this year we are going to spill as well.
All right, thank you very much. General Manager in charge of Public Affairs with the Ghana Water Company, Stanley Mate, as we observe International Water Day. Now let me take you back to the Northern Region because my colleague, Martina Bugri, joins me via Zoom as we look at the situation in that region and how it's become extremely difficult for people there to have access to potable drinking water. Martina, you are back on the Pulse. Martina, you're welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News.
And thank you.
Yes, okay. Yes, Martina. So a while ago, we watched your report and it's quite sad that you have people, you know, struggling for space with animals to have access to water, which in itself does not even look good.
Yes, so that's the current situation in most communities in the northern region. And this particular water space that we visited is serving over 18 communities in between Tolong and then the northern region. And when you come to the Tamale town itself, they draw this water and bring it into town and sell it to homes. The gallon that we popularly call Kufuor gallon goes for two cedis. I mean, dirty water, but it's being sold. And the barrels they use for, there's oil barrels, three of them is 50 cedis. People have to rely on this water to be able to have their domestic activities complete. Community after community, you go through, their dams are dried up. And in some areas, over 3 months, 4 months, water have not flowed through their pipes. My neighborhood, for instance, for the past 2 months, we haven't had water. And it's getting extremely difficult for water tankers to even get clean water to supply communities. And so they are largely depending on these dams, which have become a space for both animals and just name it, any activity that people engage in. In this particular Kogolenga Dam, it's for irrigation. So you have farmers, they are using chemicals, putting the things back into the water. Fishermen are inside the water. And just name it. But people are relying on this type of water to survive.
So Martina, before you go on, just a quick question about that. So when they fetch the water from the dam, what do they do? Do they boil it before they use it?
So in the report, you heard Abdul say that when they pour it into their containers and then they begin to cook. They use it to wash bowls. Some drink it like that. So people do not treat this water. And he didn't even know that he could get some waterborne diseases if he drank this water that is not treated. And so that's the situation. Most people are just drinking the water. When you get to the river, the dam there, people just come and they fetch and start drinking. So it's really a very terrible situation as we speak now in the northern region. It is not only in Tamale, but if you go towards Yendi and other communities, it's just not a northern region thing. I would say that the north itself, so Savannah, northern region, upper east, upper west, just name it. The water situation has become a dire situation.
I remember when Haruna Idrisu, the member of parliament for Tamale South, brought this to the attention of the speaker on the floor of parliament. The response from the Ministry of Works and Housing to him was that government was going to facilitate the deployment of some tankers to serve the Tamale community. I don't know whether after that, you know, announcement on the floor, you've seen evidence of that in the metropolis.
If it's yet to start, I don't know, but I haven't seen any community yet where they are distributing water for free. Those I have seen are people who have purchased, they gather containers at a spot, contribute as a community, and then buy a tanker, and then the tanker will come and distribute into their containers, and then they'll fetch home. That is what I have seen. But if they have begun deploying of tankers to supply water, I am not aware of that.
And then my final question before I let you go, you heard the general manager for in charge of public relations for the Ghana Water Company. His response to me in this afternoon is that they are having difficulties dealing with sun winners. The reason why some of their primary source for water is beginning to dry up. Is that the main issue?
Yes. So sun winning is a big issue in the Nauni area. We agree. But that can solely not be the reason why for some communities over 4 months, 5 months, they haven't had water. So maybe the other challenges that is beyond the sun winning. I mean, you can't convince somebody who hasn't had water for the past 4 months that it is because of the sun winning that they are not getting water. What of other communities that once in a while get water? So maybe they may have to relook at the redistribution of water so that at least some communities can, even if it is once in every 1 or 2 months, I think people would appreciate.
Thank you very much. Martina Bugri is our Northern Regional Correspondent, giving us situational report on the water situation, especially in Tamale. Now, meanwhile, the Water Resources Commission is worried Ghana is witnessing a concerning drop in water quality attributed to land use activities, prompting urgent calls for collaborative action. Authorities are stressing the need to address destructive land practices to protect the nation's dwindling water resources. There's more in this report.
Human activities like illegal mining, fishing with harmful chemicals, and improper waste management are contributory factors to depreciation in water quality. Recent statistics reveal a significant decline in the quality of Ghana's water resources, depreciating from 86% to 58.8%. The Executive Director of Water Resource Commission, Dr. Bob Alpha, highlighted the reasons for this decline in water quality.
Ghana's water resources is actually going down in terms of the quality. We are having degradation of our water bodies due to land use activities as indicated in the morning. However, we also have some parts of Ghana where we have quite a lot of good water resources. If you look at the Volta Basin system, all the way from the northern part of Ghana to Akosombo Dam, the level of galamsey activities there is very minimal. So for some areas, we have good water quality. In other areas, we have bad water quality. That's the situation now. In 2005, we were around 86. So we had very good water resources in terms of the percentage. Then galamsey started, and then we started losing some of our rivers. The turbidity levels are very high. If we're able to fight galamsey and waste disposals, I think we should be getting back to the same 86%. But we are within the borderline. We are still a water-secure country. However, we are classified as a water-vulnerable country. We are very vulnerable when it comes to water resources. If we take the next steps to the left, then we will be into a water-insecure country. That's where we are.
He gave possible solutions which could help curb the situation, mentioning that proactive measures aimed at reversing this trend must be pursued by stakeholders to ensure a sustainable future for all.
We have to collaborate with other agencies. So we collaborate with the Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources. We collaborate with the EPA and other agencies to work together towards, you know, eliminating this galamsey menace. But it will take a while. It is a very difficult fight. It started long ago. But we want everybody to be on board for the fight against galamsey. Bad fishing methods, people using chemical, for instance, to fish. Waste disposal is one of our biggest challenges. We all know how we dispose of our solid waste. And when it rains, all that is washed into our rivers. So we are tackling the waste disposal issues with the assemblies, the fish farming also with the Minister of Fisheries. Agriculture, farming along the river banks, you know, when that happens, the fertilizer that we use can be washed into, you know, our rivers and lakes. So we are collaborating with all these agencies to ensure we minimize the impacts of all these activities.
World Water Day celebrates water and inspires action to tackle the global water crisis. A core focus of this day is to support the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goal 6, which is water and sanitation for all by 2030.
Now, let's wrap up on this water conversation as we celebrate the World Water Day. Let's have a conversation on the water sanitation situation across the country and how the gaps in the availability can be fixed. With me in the studio is Mr. Patrick Apoya, a member of the Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation and WASH Experts. Mr. Apoya, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So before we spoke to the Ghana Water Company, we had a report from Tamale.
Yeah.
And we followed it up with what really is happening.
Yeah.
You saw the fact that animals and humans struggling for water.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this is not new in your area of expertise.
That's true. Well, it's not new, but the case of Tamale or Northern Region as per se is pathetic. I started my career in Tamale, the Northern Region. That was back in 1993-94. And it was exactly the same situation that we were fighting against, we're advocating, we're pushing for.
In 1994?
1994. That's when I started my career with the Minister of Health then. And it was the leading hub of guinea worm disease in Ghana. Mm. Now, the idea was to use water as the main intervention. This was exactly the same situation. 30 years after, exactly the same situation. If you pull videos in those times, exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you'd wonder, I mean, sometimes the problems that we are dealing with, sometimes it is either people just think they can cope, they have been coping, so let them cope. Mm. Or something else has to be done before the duty bearers can do something about it. If you look at, it's not as if we don't know what the cause is. We know the cause of the problem in Northern Region. Mm. For the rural area, groundwater is the most preferred option for water supply to them. Mm. But with groundwater, once you drill your borehole and you can tap the water underground, it is very clean, except in a few cases where you may have some iron or fluoride contamination. Mm. But once you get it, it's very clean, and communities are able to manage it at very low cost of maintenance, and whatever you can think of. Unfortunately, a large part of Northern Region falls on a zone we call the Horseshoe Zone, which is a very difficult hydrogeological terrain that you can drill whatever, you never get water on the ground.
Yeah.
So it is known that for these places, groundwater is not an option for them. But everybody is still fixed that, no, let's try and see groundwater, whatever we can. These communities that you have seen, there's probably about 17 to 20 rounds of drilling in those communities, and still we couldn't get water. Now, does it mean that because you couldn't get water,
you should just leave it
like that?
No.
No. The fact that your first option is groundwater, and groundwater is not available, then there has to be an option too. Either you treat individual dams, or you treat from the big rivers. The Oti River is there. The White Volta is there.
Right.
Bupeyapi. They are in the region. But just that cost, that, you know, extending water to these places would be so expensive, is what is causing the problem that we are seeing today.
So there's such a lack of investment and planning.
It's lack of
in addressing this
planning.
Matter.
In fact, I couldn't have put it better. Lack of belief that is a lack of appreciation that these communities are actually facing a problem. Mm. But it's like they're already used to it. And unfortunately, those who are the emergence of sachet water and bottled water has worsened the problem for them. Mm. Because people like you and them who have the capacity to talk and to voice out if you don't get water, for government to listen, you will simply just opt out for your bottled water. And only those who cannot afford are left. And their voices can never reach far. For those at that level, their voices don't go far. The Konawas tries to amplify their voices. We work with the Ministry of Sanitation and Water Resources. Mm-hmm. But they too have their limitations. I mean, they have even done a very good job to get it to where we are. It would have been worse than that. Mm. That is the situation that we are facing.
So in the last 30 years that you've witnessed this,
yes.
What has been the link between poor access to water and hygiene and the well-being of the people in the catchment area?
You can, at the end of it all, the proxy indicator for whether we're making progress in water or not is the health impact on yourself.
Right.
Then also the impact on your social and economic development. Now, if you look at the poverty trends in Northern Ghana, overall Ghana, you see that it has come down. Mm. Of course, here it has come up a bit. But in Northern, if you take those parts where water has been a crisis, mm-hmm. the poverty situation has always been rising. I should have prepared the data for you to see. Mm-hmm. They have never experienced that poverty reduction or improvements in living standards that we have all enjoyed over the past 20 years. They have remained the same. And if you take the infant mortality trends, Northern region continues to be at the bottom. If you take, let's say, child mortality rate, where a national average may be 50%, that means of every 1,000 children that are born, by their fifth birthday, you have at least 50 of them dying. 50 out of 100 dying. In Northern region, that's 50%. Up to 80. It's not 50%. It's like 50 out of 1,000.
Right.
Good. If you take Northern region, it could be as high as 70. Whereas the national average. So every indicator.
And the linkage here is to what?
It is because without water, it curtails your education, mm-hmm. because there's no teacher who will agree to stay in such a place. Mm-hmm. It curtails your ability to even get a good medical professional to stay in your community. Mm-hmm. And therefore, your medical situation is terrible.
And that obviously will affect your development.
It will development. And the water itself is infected. You definitely, in fact, the water that you see is heavily laden with a whole lot of bacteria, worms, and all forms of disease-causing agents. Now, people think that, they have been drinking it for the years.
And so it's acceptable.
It is not true. Because if you go to those places and you take their child mortality rates, it is likely to double what everywhere else is experiencing. Mm. It is just because people probably have some, mystical conceptions about death. It's God that has given and it's God that has taken. Mm. And they just take it in good faith. Everybody is not looking at the water as the cause of their problems. But that does the fact that they are not linking it doesn't mean that, the government should just leave them aloof.
So this clearly cannot be a blame that we can put squarely on the head of Ghana Water Company.
No. Most of this, Ghana Water Company has very little to do with it, mm-hmm. because the structure of this water sector, Ghana Water Company is, when we say urban water, it's not even every urban area that they are responsible.
Exactly.
They have about 85 towns that is in their hands. Mm-hmm. And those ones are like the regional capitals, mostly, mm-hmm. and a few district capitals that are very viable commercially. That is what is in the hands of
community and water sanitation.
For the rural subsector, it is in the hands of the district assemblies with community water and sanitation agency as the facilitator. And because of the failure of that segment, where assemblies were supposed to be supporting communities to manage the systems, assemblies were also just, you just say that this is your responsibility, no resources to go with it. How do you expect the assembly to perform their mandate?
Nothing.
So they basically just wash off their hands. The assemblies are even still doing their best. Even the little IGF they raise, they're able to put something small, but it is nowhere near. Mm. And that's why now Community Water and Sanitation Agency is now transitioning to also become a rural utility.
Right.
So to be like the Ghana Water Company Limited in charge of rural areas. Then you can point at somebody and say, you have not been able to do your job in this area or in that area. But assemblies, where will you stand to go and accuse an assembly that you have failed?
Even for the IGF, for assemblies in such areas, I'm wondering how much
that is pathetic. It's pathetic
to represent IGF.
Yeah.
But Mr. Poya, let's come from the north and look at the national picture.
Yeah.
And whether or not we are improving in our water delivery from where you sit.
Yes.
Is it getting better? The Ghana Water Company, they have enumerated on countless occasions the challenges they are facing in bringing water to our home. Where I live, I've relied on borehole for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And then, even in Cape Coast, last month, they said they were going to cut production by 30% because of the impact of illegal mining and the rest.
Correct.
Nationally, what is the situation for you?
Okay, let's just look at the official statistics that is supported by Ghana Statistical Service and the international community, the Joint Monitoring Program. As we speak now, at least 86% of Ghanaians are supposed to be having access to a basic source of drinking water.
According to the Ghana Statistical Service.
Yes. Now, that access means that at least water that you will not travel more than 30 minutes in and out to fetch and drink, either it is in your home or even if you have to go out, you shouldn't spend more than 15 minutes in, 15 minutes out to drink. That's 85%. Given that that is the real situation, the 15% left, if you look at 15% of 31 million, which is maybe we're approaching 32 million that's a huge chunk of the people that don't have at all. They don't even have what we call a basic access. that is already not good enough. If you go to urban area, they have even done some progress in the last 10 years. But for the rural area, 10 years ago, they were around 70%. Today, coverage. Today, they're around 72%.
Okay.
So in the last 10 years, just 4 percentage point movement.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the population is growing.
It's also growing. Population is growing more than that. Our 10 years growth is more, it's like 2 years population growth.
Right.
So you can imagine the situation in the rural area. And it's because of the way the rural area has been organized. You are saying communities should do their own thing without the necessary support for them. But even coming to the urban areas that we are talking about, that we say it is 96.4% of urban populations have access to a basic drinking water source. That access, between that, half of the year you won't get it.
Right.
But because officially you have it, it is counted that you have it. And remember that when we are counting access, it is not only what Ghana Water Company is providing that is counted.
Mm-hmm.
50%, 53% of that 96% is sachet water and bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say half of that 50% is coming from Ghana Water, that they will take Ghana Water Company water
and then refine it and produce.
To produce. That means if you were to remove 13% out of half of that 53%, Ghana Water Company would not be the 92% that we are talking about.
Mm.
Ghana Water Company is likely to be around the 80%. And for the last 10 years, we seem to just be around there.
We are not making any progress.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it is understandable. You know, the Pareto principle says that that last 5% is more difficult than the 90% that
you have covered.
That you have,
and
you have
made themselves up. I mean, this morning, the general manager said that, I mean, there are people even here in Greater Accra.
Yeah.
They've not even extended pipes to them. So
no.
For you, there's no way they can.
They can even, but they count all of them as access. Because in the urban area, if you don't buy station water, what will you do? You can't get water in, like what we have in Northern Region.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't exist. So they are coming to me covered simply because I don't have an option. If there were to be an option of surface water, a lot of people in Accra would have been dependent on surface water.
But in terms of government investment, will you say that, I mean, you've read budgets every year and the allocation to the sector.
Yeah.
Will you say that government has been consistent in terms of meeting the public good as far as water provision is concerned?
No, I won't say so. Water until recently has never been a political issue.
Mm.
Unlike electricity, where you go to a community, they will say no electricity, no vote.
No vote.
No clinic, no vote. Water had not reached that extent. So the politicians' minds are those who can go on a strike and it can create political crisis for governments. So education will take 25% of, let's say, the budget.
Every year.
Every year. The water sector takes like 0.1%
mm-hmm.
of the budget. But that 0.1%, if you look at it, it is more of the staff salaries, personal emoluments, goods and services. But when it comes to the services,
investments is nothing.
And it is a chronic problem. So it is not linked to this government is doing better than that government. It is because altogether, you know, politicians, the way where they get their dividends from, where you put your money and you can get the political dividends back. Because water is not that organized and you can have staff coming out to strike and to put pressure, it is easy to sacrifice.
Because people resort to their own means.
You just resort to your own means in your own ways. Whether you are dying in your skin, it's something difficult for any person to hear. You can sweat and die in your coat. Nobody will hear.
Right.
And that's the reason why the water sector, we need like $5 billion investments in the water sector per year.
Every year.
For the next 10 years before we can think of achieving our...
Otherwise, targets. What do you expect
but right now,
to see
we are getting,
in the next 10 years if this investment is not...
If it is not there,
mm-hmm.
it will be like, it will take us, like, it will be like, if you can construct yourself back to, let's say, the last 50 years,
mm-hmm.
you'll be in that situation. The situation that we were when we're getting our independence from the white man
mm-hmm.
would have been back in that situation.
That, mm-hmm.
If you look at it in percentage-wise, the percentage of people who had access to this, those who didn't have, the number of people who had, and those who didn't have, it will be like that in the next
10 years. $5 billion will be practically...
It's practically...
for government to raise.
No. If you take Ghana Water, for instance,
mm-hmm.
they are difficult to get to financial sustainability because of legacy debts.
Right.
Debts that have accrued over the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to deal with it. So when I'm talking about the investments, it is because of the years of neglect of investments that has accumulated. Even the Ghana Water that we are complaining about, let's give them credit. But for the ingenuity of the engineers, you wouldn't have even had water to drink.
But again,
a lot of the systems that have been put there,
right,
over 60 years, 70 years, the companies have all dissolved. They don't exist again.
Mm.
For a part to even fix, it's not as if you can go and get it somewhere.
Mm.
It's the engineers who have to figure out how to fabricate and replace. So
they've always emphasized the point that,
yes,
I mean, it's about time they replace all their machines.
Yes.
But where's
the investment?
Where's the investment?
Uh-huh.
But there's also the other subject of the protection they get from the state.
Yes.
So that even as the state is not investing so much in water provision, the state should be able to protect themselves, that the little that they have, they'll be able to use it and use it well. But here's the case that, to even treat raw water because of activities of illegal mining and the others, the little that they have, they are pumping even more. And so they are left with no option than to take drastic actions that affect me eventually.
And that is where you also find it difficult to understand. Look, I agree that the Galamsey challenge is a huge one. But to now know that this water here is a security issue. It's like Akosumbo. You cannot just say any person can walk to Akosumbo Dam. There must be special security provisions to ensure that it is secured all the time. Some of the water systems that supply our cities, they have to have the same security status like Akosumbo Dam.
Right.
To the extent that there is, if you cannot protect all the water resources, Cape Coast, for instance, let me just use Cape Coast.
Mm.
Their water source for treatment. The machines were designed to treat water with turbidity levels of about 500 turbidity units. Now, as I speak today, the turbidity levels are 13,000. Just imagine
from 500 to 13,000.
500 to 13,000 turbidity units. How will a company manage? The company now will invest significantly 20 times more than they should have invested under normal circumstances. So the government, I agree with you. Government, even if you are not giving the money, what can you do to protect them from incurring such
and that was my
losses
question. Because the effect of this is what they have said,
yes,
that they are cutting down production in the central region by 30%,
and that is a problem because of the cost of chemical. Even the speed with which you can produce now will reduce. So it's not as if they have intentionally said we will cut, but there's no way the machines can process that volume of water given the turbidity.
Right.
And I agreed, I mean government is doing its best. Maybe if government was not doing whatever they are doing now, maybe we wouldn't have even seen water running.
Absolutely.
Again. So let's not just look at it as if government is just asleep, they're not doing anything. But we should have been able to target certain water sources and say, as for this one, no go area. Even if it means putting a military camp there, because it is a security spot, we ought to do. But we are not seeing that yet.
Zapoya, before I let you go, your final words as we wrap up on the World Water.
Finally, I will say that citizens should recognize water as a critical foundation for their development. And whatever role we can play on our part, because there are also some behavior issues that we should also be addressing. Let's do that. Let's engage patiently with the authorities, and let's work together to fix the water problem. Without water, there can never be development for the community and for a nation. That's what I would say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Patrick Apoya, member of the NGO that is in this particular area, working to ensure that we have safe drinking water, water in our homes. This is The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. We'll take a short break. When we return, we'll go to the health sector.
That's true.
It can store a lot of water.
That's so true.
Wow. It has a walking tortoise on it.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
I can see S-I-N-T-E-X. Syntax.
That is so true, my daughter.
but it's faster to spoil.
That's not true.
But why?
Hey! Syntex was the first to introduce double layer tanks in Ghana. Syntex again was the first to introduce white inner layers in Ghana. Syntex gives you the biggest warranty, 7 years. No matter your water needs, Syntex is the answer. Syntex tank. Are you strong? Are you tough?
Fortune Rice, it needs just a little water. The grains don't stick and the aroma and taste are delicious. Fortune Rice, always on point, just like mom.
Now introducing Fortune Emopa, your tasty Ghana rice for all your rice meals.
This advert is FDA approved.
Across Africa, a new era has begun. Shifting our focus to a new horizon, connecting us with one purpose, to create and share opportunities to grow. Today, we are making a brighter tomorrow, built by our dreams and our energy. Across our continent, across the world, we are creating a better way to a better future. A Pan-African future, together. Ecobank, a better way, a better Africa.
This coming Easter Monday is Love FM Family Party in the Park. 1st April 2024, Rattray Park, Bayer de Deja. So start putting plans together and let's have the biggest family picnic experience ever. Where my bubbly little kitty bobs, neckabums, papas, we will make available all the kids' playing items. Trampoline, bouncy castles, electric train, merry-go-round, stationary airplane, horse race, face painting, TV games. For all the adults in Kumasi, get ready for the adult corner. Get your dancing shoes on with some electrifying live band music. Date is Easter Monday, 1st April 2024 at the Rattray Park, the Nyame. Rate is a cool 10 Ghana cedis, 8 a.m. sharp. The Love FM Family Party in the Park. Easter edition, we simply can't wait.
To this Friday's edition of The Pulse, and we are in the final minutes of the show. Now, if you are seeing red bands at various hospitals and schools across the country, that's because nurses and midwives are serving notice to register their displeasure over the recent increment in the cost of foreign verification fees for health workers. The government announced a new cost of foreign verification from the initial 550 Ghana cedis to a staggering 3,000 Ghana cedis, representing 445% increement. Now, calls for the Health Ministry and the Nurses and Midwife Council to review the costs have proven futile. The National Council of the Ghana Registered Nurses and Midwives Association has therefore outlined actions to be undertaken from March 22nd, that's today, to April 3rd, to register their discontent at the new fees. So this is their statement communicating their displeasure, and they say that the fees from 500 Ghana cedis to 3,000 is just unreasonable and quite disrespectful to them. And so they say that they went back on strike, they withdraw OPD services, they withdraw their services ultimately if their concerns are not addressed by the Ministry of Health in this latest increment that has been announced. Now, Jones Ofuye Anto is the Ashanti Regional Chairman of the Ghana Registered Nurses and Midwives Association, and he joins us via Zoom. Jones, you welcome to the polls here on Joy News.
Thank you very much.
All right. So you've made it clear that you undertake series of actions starting today, because this verification fees has risen from 500 Ghana cedis to 3,000. And from my understanding, this is contained in the fees and charges approved by Parliament, which means that the initial consultations were done before the Ministry of Health presented this to Parliament for the necessary ratifications to be done. You didn't get any hint of this?
Nobody informed us. Even we have doubts whether that the National Midwifery Council even presented a thing before their board. We have doubts. The thing, nobody involved in any of the union, the DRNMA, which is holding the collective bargaining certificate of all nurses and graduates, were not involved. All we heard was, and even as of now, nobody has officially communicated anything to us. We, even our chest in Parliament is not proving anything. Meanwhile, we wrote to them on the 11th of March that we are against it, that we're not consulted, and that we should be attended to our. But as of now, we have written to the Ministry of Health, no reply, the National Midwifery Council, no reply, and the Parliament of Ghana, no reply. So we feel that disrespect is too much. And how can anybody, if Parliament really saw this and passed it, how can the people's representatives pass a price increase of 445.5% under these conditions of the nurse? How many nurses are paid in Ghana up to 3,000 cedis for you to charge verification fees of 3,000? Which a lot of countries are not even charging. Because the Nurses and Midwifery Council itself trained me, gave me all the certificates, and every year takes an amount of money from me too, because I'm with them. And they're telling a third party that I'm a nurse registered in the country, I'm a midwife registered in the country of good standing. They say they are taking 550 cedis. Even that 550 cedis, what effort have they put in place to be able to charge that? Meanwhile, it's not only that, they say they are increasing it to 3,000 cedis. This is not fair. This is it's just disdainful and respectful to us as a profession.
But your understanding from what I picked earlier is that you think that this is to discourage nurses and midwives from, you know, seeking better lives, for want of a better word, outside of the country. And you think that this is not going to help?
My brother, verification is not only to allow people to work outside the country. And even if that is it the process to ask nurses not to go? Is it the process to contain nurses from traveling? Verification is used for other things, like school admissions, like other international obligations, like working with NGOs. Even in Ghana, international NGOs in Ghana, for instance, if you want to work with them, they want to verify. Sometimes people are doing their PhDs or masters in universities abroad. Sometimes even as a distance education, they need all those things to be able to do it. By the way, over 5,000 nurses are midwives in the house. So where do government of Ghana need nurses such that you say you have over 5,000 nurses are midwives in the country? Employ them, you will not employ them. If some of them are leaving, you say we will not allow you to leave. And my brother, you know the cost of it, of even air tickets. You know the cost of air tickets. Well, if 3,000 cedis able to deter somebody who could really want to travel from traveling, it's just not right that this will be the measures that you will put in place to prevent a nurse or midwife from traveling. It is just unheard of. It's disrespectful to us, and we think it's not fair under the circumstances.
So your mother union, the Nurse and Midwives Association, what their reaction to this? How has it been? Are they for or also against this new fees and charges?
We cannot be for it. The GRMMA is definitely against it. We cannot be for it. And that is why we wrote on 11 March protesting against it. And they have not even given us a common reply that your letter is worth us, and that we are even thinking about it. Possibly they are thinking that they will not even consider what we are talking about. And that is why today, from today to 27th, all nurses and midwives in the country are going to be in red bands. Protesting. And after the red band, 28th, if they don't do it, we will draw OPD services. And we can assure you that by 3rd April, if they have not done it, we are going to withdraw all services.
And this will be a nationwide action. I'm asking whether this will be a nationwide action.
Definitely. And this is nationwide. Anything we are saying is nationwide.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Fia Antop. He is the president of the Nurses and Midwife Association, and they are clearly not happy with the announcement of new fees and charges for verification. And from what we have picked, it has jumped from 500 Ghana cedis to over 3,000 Ghana cedis. So if you want to be verified for any international deal as a nurse or midwife, instead of 500 Ghana cedis, you'll be paying over 3,000 Ghana cedis. And that is the situation now. Now, it's almost the weekend is here with us again. And if you have no plans this weekend, perhaps I can suggest something for you. And it is the closing ceremony of the All African Games that brought together athletes from different African countries to compete in various sporting disciplines. Now, how did Ghana teams fare in the tournament as wraps up tomorrow? Let me engage my colleague, Victor Achutamaklo, who is with our sports team. So, Victor will be joining me in studio, but I indicated early on that if you really want to have fun this weekend, I'm absolutely optimistic that a visit to the Lagos Sports Stadium or the Boteman Sports Complex will be an ideal place to hang out, especially with your family and friends as we wrap up the All Africa Games here in Accra. And Ghana is doing well on the medal table. We'll bring you that to you in a jiffy. And Victor, you know, is joining me in studio as we have a chat about how far the games has gone and then what we are to expect in this final day tomorrow as a wrap-up. Yesterday, the Princesses of Ghana, they beat Nigeria to claim gold in the female football competition. And after the game at the Cape Coast Sports Stadium, they were treated to some nice jama tunes by the folks from the University of Cape Coast. Victor, you're welcome.
Hi, Elton.
So tomorrow is the final day, right?
Yes.
And how are we doing, Ghana?
Well, we've got high hopes, and we started quite brightly because the women's hockey team have just delivered gold, beating again Nigeria.
Wow.
Yes. Fourth
women, the hockey team?
Yes. So they have secured gold. The men's team will also be in action. The game is currently ongoing. But in the volleyball competition, the women's team have lost their semifinal contest to Egypt.
Okay.
The men's team versus Tunisia, that's currently ongoing. So that's one area where we've got our eyes and hopeful that we can get at least into the final and then get a minimum of a silver. In terms of boxing, five of our boxers are in action tonight. Each of them is guaranteed a minimum of a silver. If they win, they get gold medals. So Sam Olteshi, who won bronze from the Commonwealth Games from the Olympic Games, I beg your pardon,
right,
Paris 2020, he is also in action. Mohamed Ayite, the former national flyweight champion, is also in action today. If he gets to win, that's adding to our gold. You've got the son of the legendary Brahma Kamoko.
Ambitious Tilapia.
Ambitious Tilapia. He's gone one better than his father.
Okay.
In 1999, his father won bronze at the African Games in Johannesburg, South Africa, in the heavyweight division. but he is not guaranteed to finish with, at the very least, a silver medal. So he's got one better than his father. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Mohammed Ayiti as well. Samuel Teshi, I've already mentioned. And then, so five of them. Already, we have a lady who finished with bronze. Actually, Ghana's first medal in the boxing competition, Janet Akwa. She won bronze in the women's contest. And so, all other things being equal, we're hoping that we'll catch up with Tunisia and possibly leapfrog them on the medal table.
And I also do understand that there are also some field and track events that are also coming up.
Yeah, that are so
tonight, right?
In a matter of minutes, mm-hmm. Joseph Paul Amoah is going to compete in the 200-meter final at the University of Ghana Stadium. Later tonight at 8 p.m., the Black Satellites are in action. They are playing in the men's football final.
Which means that there could be another gold.
Another gold. So Ghana is finishing the tournament strongly.
But this is a tournament that started for some on a very poor note. At some point, some of our sportsmen were carried on a private vehicle. Some complained about not getting enough equipment to train the bicycle and the others. But it looks like the ending is becoming more exciting.
I think what you'd have to give the LOC and the sports ministry a bit of credits for is how they have reacted to some of these setbacks that they have encountered along the line. So, for example, the decision to review the ticketing policy is proven to be a masterstroke. Because originally there was an issue with the ticketing platform, and there was also a certain level of apathy or disinterest
right.
in purchasing the ticket. But they reviewed that last weekend, decided that they would open free gates or they would not sell tickets at all. Even for the VIP section, they were only selling tickets as a means of regulating.
Of controlling people who go there.
Controlling who would go there. And since then, we have seen ridiculous numbers as far as the track and field at the University of Ghana, the swimming competition, volleyball, the indoor volleyball competitions. I've been at Bukom the past week, and the numbers there have been crazy. Today, we expect that to even go
even higher, and I can even imagine the traffic on the road now.
Exactly, and the boxing bouts are taking place late into the night. So yesterday, Samuel Teshi fought around 10 p.m. He had a capacity crowd there to cheer him on. So it just shows you the level of interest and how people have responded to some of the changes that the LOC have.
So the field and track events taking place at the University of Ghana.
Yeah.
Yes, but is there any activity at Boteman?
Yeah, so that's where the indoor volleyball competition is currently ongoing. The Theodosia Oko hockey pitch. We have the hockey competition also ongoing there. So tomorrow we'll have the final of the indoor volleyball competition, and hopefully the men's team are able to represent. But first, they would have to get around Tunisia.
And then the closing ceremony. We are told somewhere will headline it.
Yes. So typically, it draws one big character, often a musician, who has to come and perform, and that's what's going to happen. And a lot of people expected that. Once Shatawale got the gig to do the opening ceremony. Stonebowl was going to do that.
And the closing is also taking place at the University of Ghana. And I just want to believe that Vivendi Ghana, the company that put together the opening ceremony, I mean, this week we were told of, you know, threats by them that they were going to pull out because of some money that were due them. Government had not paid. I'm just hoping that have been resolved.
I'd like to give the LOC a bit of the benefit of the doubt. That, as I have said, they have shown a certain disposition to be able to respond to some of the challenges that they encounter and then deliver the results. So let's just hope that...
And then finally, where do you want to see Ghana on the medal table? Egypt, they are runaway champions.
I was saying that. So Tunisia are, what, 5 or 6 gold medals ahead of us. Now, the rankings are done such that the gold medals carry more weight. And... It doesn't matter
how many bronze or silver you get.
If any country has more gold than you, they will rank ahead of you. Today, if all goes well and we're able to secure the 6 or 7 gold medals that we expect, we should be able to offset the balance. We should be able to usurp Tunisia on that 5th position and get into the top 5. But that is also on the condition that Tunisia themselves do not do well. So, for example... Exactly. We're facing them in the men's indoor volleyball semifinals. So that is one area.
Of course. Everybody is prepared.
It's more or less a double header.
All right. Victor, thank you very much for coming. My only disappointment with you is that you are wearing Accra House of Hope jersey.
I'm wearing the greatest.
But next time when you're carrying on my show, tell me. So I also put on Asante Kotoko jersey. I mean, I can't accept this on my show.
I'm wearing the jersey of the greatest football club in Dallas.
100 and something years. Yeah. And you won the Champions League only once.
We've beaten Kotoko to win the CAF Conference. That's what matters to us.
But in terms of trophy, we are ahead of you. All right. Victor Chitemeklo is with our sports decks. And so, this evening, right after the show, I'm heading towards the University of Ghana Sports Stadium to witness the track and field events, the final, showdown, and with the hope that Ghana will win more goals so that we can overtake Tunisia and then come to a very respectable position on the medal table. Well, that's it for our show this Friday on The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Let's Talk Showbiz is coming up next. You have a great and a wonderful weekend. Whatever you're up to in the hours ahead, I do hope that is